Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. Imagine
Hey,
a
Grant.
world, okay, where the scars of trauma, they don't just fade, but they twist. They become this driving force that blurs the lines. It blurs the lines between who deserves justice and who's the one who delivers it. And that's the unsettling territory we're going to explore in today's deep dive. We're plunging into Dark Justice, a gripping thriller, by the way, by J.L. Hughes. If you find yourself, fascinated by those complex mysteries that really dig deep, right, into the darkest parts of the human psyche and leave you questioning everything,
Oh, sure.
make sure to hit that like and subscribe button for more deep dives.
Absolutely.
So in Dark Justice, we are immediately pulled into this relentless pursuit of a serial killer, only known as the Redeemer, and it's all through the eyes of homicide detective Jade. But here's the thing. This isn't your typical straightforward, hunt.
It's like a descent, into these fractured minds of both the hunter and the hunted, where, deeply buried traumas, they ignite this dangerous and intensely personal game. So get ready, because you're going to be challenged, right, on your understanding of justice and redemption and the whole lasting impact of violence.
So let's step into that world, right? The world that J.L. Hughes crafts. It's disquieting, and the book throws you right in. I mean, immediately you're immersed in this subterranean setting. I don't know, it feels both sterile and suffocating at the same time. You can almost sense the gritty residue of cement dust, It mixes with that sharp tang of bleach. But then cutting through it all is this, I don't know, unmistakable metallic scent, right? Fresh human blood. And what's so crazy, so impactful about that is it's not just some random victim's blood, it's the narrator's own, that flips the script.
It totally subverts your expectations, right? Of a typical thriller opening.
Oh, yeah, because you're thrown into this world where violence isn't this distant, threat. For the narrator, it's a part, an intrinsic part of their existence. It's this legacy that's been passed down from their father. So it's not about, some fall from grace, some innocence lost. It's about a state of being, an ongoing state. And I feel like that sets the stage really for a narrative where violence isn't just this thing that happens to people, it shapes their core, who they are.
And what's so compelling about that is the contrast it creates with the main investigation that we then follow, which centers on Detective Jade and her, I mean, she's relentless in her pursuit of the Redeemer, right? So you have this instant juxtaposition. You have someone who seemingly was born into violence and then someone fiercely battling against it, yet both are so profoundly marked by it, by its
Whoa.
reach. It makes you think, can anyone really escape it?
Right. Escape the shadow of violence. And you're right. We are thrust into this world of Detective Jade and her relentless pursuit, in this newly painted yet desolate parking garage. Hughes, by the way, the author, masterfully conveys her focus, this unwavering focus. You can almost hear it, the determined rhythm of her boots on the concrete. It almost feels like a challenge or an announcement. You know what I mean? I'm here in this sterile, seemingly empty space. It's like she's daring the killer to show himself.
It's a powerful image, isn't it? And one thing that really strikes me about Jade, especially in these early scenes, is how her past trauma, it isn't just backstory. It's active. It actively distorts how she experiences the present. Hughes actually writes about how traumatic memories can betray your senses. And for Jade, even just her own heart beating faster, that triggers this devastating memory of her mother's death, that raw, I don't know, feeling of being abandoned. So it's this visceral way for the author to connect her inner turmoil with the actual external investigation that's going on.
Right, so her personal stakes are clear to us, right away.
Exactly.
And then into this already charged atmosphere enters the Redeemer. But what's interesting is this magnetic draw, right, he seems to have on Jade. It's described as a smoldering fire into a flash burn, which to me, that suggests a connection that's both volatile and intensely immediate. This isn't just, professional obligation for her. This feels deeply personal, almost like, I don't know, a primal recognition. What do you think? Why establish this kind of intense, and I would say almost instant, link between these two characters?
I think that's a really fascinating question, and I think it could be a way for Hughes to explore the idea that sometimes the hunter and the hunted, they might be more alike than they realize.
Wow.
You know, shaped by similar traumas. Or maybe they share a deep understanding of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it more than a chase.
Yeah.
Right? There's like a psychological mirroring there.
Right.
That could be really important as the story goes on.
And building on this, I would say, almost preordained collision.
Yeah.
The name The Redeemer itself.
Oh.
It's like chilling irony, isn't it?
Oh, for sure.
Because we find out it originated in this upstate New York community. It's called Shadowhook.
Mm.
And Shadowhook, that name kind of paints a picture, right, of this like idyllic lakeside refuge.
Yeah.
But then you have these brutal crimes.
Yeah.
And they cast this, you know, sinister gloom over the town. It turns neighbor against neighbor.
Yeah.
This stark contrast, though, between outward appearances and the hidden reality, it feels very deliberate to me. I feel like, what is Hughes trying to tell us about the world she's building?
I think that deliberate irony, you know, with the name The Redeemer, which suggests like salvation.
Right.
But then the reality of these crimes is brutal. You know, it forces you to question, what does redemption even mean in this story? It highlights how easily those seemingly virtuous concepts
right.
can be twisted
right.
to justify horrific acts.
Yeah.
It's really an insight into the psychology of villains like this.
Right.
And then you have Shadowhook, which, you know, you said it has the surface tranquility, right?
Yeah.
But this underlying darkness, that becomes like a microcosm
right.
for this deceptive nature of appearances within the whole story.
Yeah.
That evil can be there, but it's beneath the surface.
Lurking, right? Beneath this veneer of normalcy. And we see, you know, it's not just these recent atrocities that are haunting Jay. The book mentions this 20-year-old unsolved homicide, something that was kept quiet, almost buried by the community.
Mm-hmm.
And these new acts of violence, it's like ripping open an old wound, you know?
Yeah.
It's just stirring up these past failures and exposing these secrets that the town's held for so long. It's like this peaceful community can't contain this darkness any longer.
Yeah.
How do you think this unresolved past impacts Jade's determination in the present?
I mean, it becomes this huge motivator for her. It's not just about preventing future crimes. It's about confronting this past failure, which probably has haunted her for, you know, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the book makes this comparison, right, to her own mother's unpunished murderer,
right,
which just amplifies that personal drive. I think it suggests this deep-seated need to not only, like, catch the Redeemer, but to finally break this cycle,
yeah,
you know, of impunity, yeah, so that history doesn't repeat itself.
Wow, that's powerful. And then we see Jade's resolve, yeah, right, put into action when she becomes fixated on gaining entry to the suspect's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole sequence with the ventilation duct.
Oh, yeah.
It really underscores her resourcefulness.
Yeah.
But it's almost like borderline recklessness, right?
For sure.
As she's relying on Wenzel's help to get to that vantage point near the roof line. I mean, what does that reveal to you, that scene about Jade and her approach to her work?
Well, first of all, it highlights that she is so focused, almost singularly focused.
Yeah.
And she's willing to push the boundaries, even if it means putting herself physically in danger,
yeah,
to pursue a lead. It suggests she trusts her instincts,
yeah,
maybe too much sometimes,
right,
and that she can be impatient with protocol, you know, when she feels like she's close to something.
A breakthrough, yeah.
So it makes you wonder, is this a strength or a potential weakness, you know?
Blind spot, almost.
Yeah.
And from that precarious vantage point, what she sees is disturbing.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the Redeemer, and he's dragging Sarah Keller into the apartment.
Yeah.
Now, her reaction is immediate.
Mm-hmm.
It's visceral. She wants to leap down and stop him, but obviously she can't because of the air shaft. So there's this agonizing tension, you know, where she's so close to him.
Yeah.
But she's trapped. She can't do anything. So how does this, like this enforced observation, how does this impact her emotionally and,
yeah,
you know, professionally?
The frustration and helplessness in that moment, I mean, it's just got to be, like, immense, you know,
yeah,
to witness that brutality firsthand, but be physically unable to do anything about it. I mean, right, talk about fueling her rage.
Right.
And her determination to catch him professionally. I mean, it gives her insight. It's traumatic insight, but it's insight into his methods and who he chooses as victims. So that's information she can use later.
Right.
Even though right now she feels powerless.
Right. But it's this crucial information that she can then take and use.
Exactly.
But we see this picture of Sarah, and it's a grim picture. She's ashen-faced, thankfully unconscious, and she's wearing this soft pink dress, but now it's crumpled. And it really humanizes her, you know, the victim in this stark way.
Yeah.
And then you have Jade's internal conflict. Do I wait for backup or do I intervene immediately? And it adds this layer of suspense because she's so close to saving a life.
Absolutely.
But she's restrained, right, by her position and by the dangers. So what is this internal struggle? What does it tell us about the kind of ethical dilemmas law enforcement officers they face in these situations?
Oh, it encapsulates that perfectly, you know, like the ethical tightrope.
Yeah.
That they walk. The instinct is to protect, to save, but they have this responsibility to follow the rules, to follow procedure,
yeah,
to stay safe so they can actually be effective. Mm. And they can't compromise the investigation.
Right.
So you have Jade struggling with this tension, right? Between this immediate emotional response and this more strategic, calculated approach.
Right. Which ultimately might lead to a more lasting solution. But in the moment, yeah, it's agonizing.
For sure.
Yeah. And it's interesting because Kane enters the story pretty quickly.
Yeah, he does.
And he's almost this voice of caution. And he reminds her of those professional boundaries that, you know, she seems to just disregard.
Right.
But we get this exchange, even with her suspension looming over her.
Mm.
It shows us their dynamic, the depth of their connection. I mean, his worry for her is palpable.
Oh, yeah.
What did that interaction tell us about their relationship and their roles in this investigation?
Well, it shows that it's built on mutual respect. That much is for sure. Mm-hmm. But also, it seems like Jade has a history of pushing those boundaries. Kane clearly cares about her. I think he recognizes her drive, her talent, even if he doesn't always love her methods.
Right, yeah.
So his concern shows that he might be the more, you know, the grounded, the by-the-book partner.
Right.
Which is interesting because it provides this necessary counterpoint.
Right.
To her more impulsive nature. So they're going to challenge each other.
Yeah.
But they're also going to support each other throughout this whole thing.
Right. And we also get these unsettling glimpses into other characters' experiences. Like early on, for instance, Ren receiving that specific threat, you know, mm-hmm, you'll return to your beloved Africa in a box.
Right.
I mean, it underscores the Redeemer's influence, right?
Yeah.
And his ability to really, like, exploit personal vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. It creates this sense that the danger extends beyond just, you know, Jade or his direct victims. What do these, like, seemingly peripheral threats, what do they do for the story?
They do a lot, I think. Yeah. First of all, they expand his reach.
Yeah.
Right? It shows that he's not just impacting his direct victims.
It's right.
A ripple effect.
Yeah.
And then they create this pervasive atmosphere of unease and paranoia. Like, no one's safe.
Right.
Anyone who's connected, even tangentially, is a potential target. And finally, I think they can act as, you know, red herrings or even introduce us to people who might be targets later. So it just adds to this whole mystery,
yeah,
you know, and keeps you guessing about the Redeemer's motives and how far he's going to go.
Right. Like, how far does his reach go? And then there's Jade's direct encounter with the Redeemer.
Yeah.
And she picks up on these what seem like insignificant details, right?
Mm-hmm.
His mouthwash.
Yeah.
It's this expensive cologne.
Yeah.
But she's so frustrated because she realizes how little she actually got from him despite being so close to him.
I know.
It really emphasizes how elusive this particular killer is.
Yeah.
Why do you think, why focus on these like mundane details during this interaction, which is so tense?
It highlights that disturbing normalcy, you know,
yeah,
that can hide extreme darkness. It's the idea that monsters can walk among us, but they look and act so ordinary.
Wow.
So for Jade, these small, like, superficial almost observations, they become huge for her because they're the only things she has.
Right.
In the face of his, you know, his anonymity.
Yeah.
So it emphasizes how hard it is to really see and understand evil, even when it's right in front of you.
Wow. That's terrifying.
It is.
And this lack of concrete leads us to Dr. Maxwell and his recommendation for Jade to consult with Dr. Rachel Lay. She's this forensic psychiatrist specializing in serial killers, right?
Yes.
And it feels like a big turning point because we're now shifting, right, to trying to understand the killer's psychology.
Right.
What does that mean for the direction of the investigation?
It means they're going from reactive to proactive.
What?
Right. Right. They're not just reacting to what he does. They're trying to understand the why.
Right.
And Dr. Lee's expertise shows us that traditional methods, they might not be enough with this guy.
Right, because he's so elusive, yeah.
He's too complex. So they have to dive deeper into profiling, into behavior patterns, and, you know, what motivates him. Yeah. They got to get inside his head.
Right, to predict what he might do next.
Absolutely.
And we learn more about Kane's background, and I find it interesting, his perspective on identity. specifically how it contrasts with his father's anxieties, you know,
right,
about him being a black man in a white man's world. Cain, on the other hand, he sees himself as just like a man in a man's world.
Yeah.
Which says a lot about how he sees himself,
mm.
you know, and his desire to be judged on his own merits. How does this nuanced portrayal of his identity, how does that contribute to the overall themes of the book?
It adds this layer of, I don't know, social commentary almost to the thriller. It challenges like simplistic notions of identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it really highlights Cain's internal strength and his focus on, you know, what we all share, our human experiences,
yeah.
rather than racial divisions. So in a story that's so dark and so violent, Cain's perspective is this subtle but important reminder of the shared humanity we all have,
right.
even in the face of extreme otherness.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes him like a more relatable and maybe even more morally grounded character.
Yeah. And then as the investigation, you know, moves forward, we learn about the initial findings in Shadowhook, right? Mm. From the Redeemer's early crimes.
Yeah.
We have the ritualistic writing at the first victim scene, this apparent lack of a struggle, and the initial like impression that the victim may have been willing almost to participate. What does that tell us about this killer and how his methods or motivations might have evolved?
I think the early crimes suggest that he may have started with a more controlled approach.
Okay.
Perhaps even, I don't know, seductive,
really?
Where he led the victims to a point where they didn't resist.
Wow.
Or at least there wasn't much resistance.
Wow.
And then you have this ritualistic writing, which suggests a need for expression or a warped sense of purpose. But then over time, it escalates to kidnapping, sedation.
Right.
Which means he either got more confident, or he needs more control, or his desires, his fantasies are changing. So it's like watching a dark artist refine his craft.
Wow. That's a really like chilling way to put it.
Yeah.
And then we see the communication. It shifts, right? He starts using email.
Yeah.
Which is more contemporary, harder to trace, obviously.
Yeah.
And this coincides with Cain's return to the investigation. So we know they're going to take a more technologically driven approach
mm-hmm.
to try and, you know, catch this guy. How does it heighten the suspense in the story?
I think it adds like a layer of modern realism. It
yeah.
shows how adaptable he is, that he understands how to avoid those old methods of detection.
Right.
And email, it's impersonal.
Right.
So it can be even more chilling because there's no human interaction.
Right.
And for the investigators, it creates a whole new set of challenges.
Yeah, totally. And then you have this visit, right, to recovering Sarah Keller.
Hmm.
And Jade, she sees the devastating consequences of what the Redeemer's done. But here's the thing. Jade makes this internal decision to withhold information about the positive rape kit results.
Yeah.
So this shows that she operates with autonomy, but also secrecy. You know, keeping crucial details to herself. What do you think her motivations are? And what are the risks associated with a decision like that?
It could be that she's trying to protect Sarah.
Okay.
You know, maybe she doesn't want to subject her to more trauma, or she doesn't want her involved in the investigation.
Until she's stronger, yeah.
Yeah, until she's better. But on the other hand, she could have a strategy, right?
Right.
Where this information is more useful if she keeps it back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are risks.
Yeah.
There could be distrust on the team, maybe a lack of collaboration. They could miss opportunities if they don't know about this.
Right.
So it highlights that tension between individual initiative.
Right.
And the need for transparency.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have that meeting, you know, with Dr. Rachel Lee, and she provides, I think, valuable insight, right?
She does.
Into the mindset of a serial killer.
Yeah.
And her observation that a new mutation in violent human behavior surfaces each year.
Mm-hmm.
That's chilling.
It is.
And then Jade has this feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the criminal knows her somehow, even though they've never met. It
yep.
just shows you the psychological impact this case is having on her.
What do you what can we infer from what Dr. Lee said about the evolving nature of violent crime?
It suggests that it's not static.
Okay.
Like the patterns and how this violence is expressed, it's not the same every year.
Yeah.
It changes.
Wow.
And it implies that we're learning more about trauma and its effects. And maybe it reflects like shifts in society that influence how these dark impulses play out.
Yeah.
So that's why the traditional profiling methods, they might not work with someone like the Redeemer.
Right.
Because he could be a deviation from the norm.
Wow, yeah.
It means that the experts have to adapt. All right, they have to constantly be learning and evolving their understanding. And as Gray and Cain, they continue their investigation. One thing that's really noticeable is the lack of evidence.
Yeah.
Like trace evidence
right.
at the crime scenes. And it really emphasizes this killer's meticulous nature and his ability almost to avoid leaving a trace.
Mm-hmm.
And then you couple that with the profile of the victims. Successful, accomplished women.
Mm.
And the subtle nature of the murders, I mean, it just paints this picture of a predator who is operating with such control and precision.
Mm-hmm.
What does that level of meticulousness tell us about him?
Well, first of all, it shows he's highly organized.
Okay.
Detail-oriented. And I think he gets a sense of power, you know, from being able to completely control everything about the crimes.
Wow.
So no trace evidence. It means careful planning, execution. He's not impulsive.
Right.
Everything he does is deliberate.
Yeah.
And then targeting successful women could mean a lot of things.
Right.
Envy, wanting to dominate powerful people, brandishing them because he thinks they don't deserve what they have. There's this need for complete dominance over everything,
right.
over his victims, the crime scene, everything.
And then the kidnappings, they become more frequent, right?
Right.
And the toxicology reports.
Yeah.
They indicate sedation. So now we're getting a clearer picture of how the Redeemer's methods are evolving.
Yeah.
He's escalating. It's like he's getting bolder, maybe more impatient in his pursuit of whatever, you know, twisted goal he has.
Yeah.
So how does that impact the investigation?
The urgency is ramped up big time. I mean, he's gone from these seemingly consensual encounters to outright kidnapping people. And now he's using drugs.
Right.
That means the victims are at a much greater risk.
Yeah.
And it suggests that, you know, his timeline might be accelerating.
Yeah.
So the pressure is on. Mm-hmm. They have to find him.
Before he can hurt anyone else. Yeah. And then we have the introduction of Harrison Wordsworth. And his connection to Wren, you know, one of the individuals who received a threatening message. And this hints, potentially, at new leads, new inquiries, maybe a different layer of connections or motivations.
Yeah.
How might these seemingly tangential connections, how could they become important to, like, unraveling this whole mystery?
Well, often those are the connections that unlock the whole thing.
Wow.
So his connection to Wren, who was threatened, it could mean that there's a whole network of people that this guy's targeting or people who are connected to him.
Yeah.
So maybe if they explore these peripheral relationships,
right.
it'll reveal like shared history, past conflicts, even common interests.
Yeah.
That could shed light on his motives or provide clues to who he is.
Wow.
So in a story this complex, you know, no connection is truly accidental.
Wow, that's a great point. And then we get this chilling glimpse into the Redeemer's mind as he's interacting with his captive, and he's saying these disturbing things about redeeming his victims, but at the same time, he's subjecting them to horrific experiences. So it's a deeply disturbed individual, right, who's operating under this warped sense of morality.
Yeah.
And the contrast between the setting, his lair, this pristine, almost sterile, you know, garage-like setting, and the brutality that he commits there. It's unsettling.
It is.
What does that juxtaposition tell us about him?
It speaks to a deeply fractured psyche.
Right.
It shows that he needs order and control in his own world. Like he's trying to compartmentalize or justify, you know, the chaos he inflicts on others.
Right.
And the talk of redemption, I mean, that's classic manipulation. Wow. It's a way for some offenders to rationalize what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It shows this total distortion, right,
yeah.
of moral concepts.
Wow.
And it shows this belief in his own twisted sense of, I don't know, righteousness. So you're seeing into a mind that's trying to create its own logic, even though it's totally warped.
That's fascinating. And Jade, you know, she's understandably frustrated when she finds out that a potential crime scene, it's been compromised.
Yeah.
And it just underscores how delicate these forensic investigations are, right?
Mm.
And the impact that even what seem like minor mistakes they can have on, you know, pursuing justice. But then you have the home sweet home message.
Right.
And it adds this personal and almost taunting dimension,
mm-hmm.
right, to his communication with investigators.
Mm-hmm.
How does that message really elevate the psychological stakes of the investigation?
Well, the crime scene being compromised, you know, it highlights that constant pressure.
Yeah.
That potential for human error.
Right.
To completely derail the investigation.
Yeah.
And then that home sweet home message. It's so creepy because it takes something, a phrase we associate with, like comfort and security.
Right.
And it twists it into something sinister.
Yeah.
It shows that he feels the sense of ownership, almost intimacy with his crimes, with his victims.
Wow.
As if these acts of violence are creating his own, you know, twisted version of home.
Wow.
So it personalizes the crime. It
yeah.
makes it this like direct taunt, especially
yeah.
to Jade.
as we delve deeper into this case, Jade's own personal connection, to a past unsolved homicide,
mm-hmm.
coupled with, you know, her strained and really complex relationship with her father,
yeah,
it continues to kind of serve as this undercurrent to the story. And it's undoubtedly shaping her actions and how relentlessly she pursues the Redeemer.
Right.
So how do you think her unresolved personal history, how does that influence her approach to this particular case?
I mean, it's got to fuel this intense need for justice.
Yeah.
You know, the loss of her mother and then this complicated relationship with her father.
Yeah.
It could create this heightened sense of empathy for the victims,
mm-hmm.
and this determination to prevent other people from going through what she went through.
Right.
And it might also explain, you know, how she pushes boundaries, how she operates independently.
Right.
Maybe she feels like she can only rely on herself to get what she wants.
Right.
The result she needs. So her personal stakes, they're huge.
Mm-hmm. So much more than just doing her job.
Right.
Yeah. And there's this moment, and it really highlights how intensely focused she is.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson, you know, he goes to her apartment to try to find her, and he's frantic.
Right.
But she is so absorbed in her work that she's wearing noise-canceling headphones.
Yeah.
It shows her dedication, but it also shows how vulnerable she is,
mm-hmm.
how concerned her colleagues are for her, right?
Yeah.
So this focus, it's obviously good for an investigation, but how can it be dangerous for someone like Jade?
Well, I think that intense focus for someone like her can lead to her being isolated.
Right.
And she might neglect her.